And this is part two of an interview with Fred Fuentes about the situation in Bolivia.
No dejaremos que cierren la linda puerta que siempre ha estado abierta a la vida.
You're listening to Latin Radical with Warwick Fry.
Where they will vote on the new referendum, and I suspect that that will also be the day when they will vote on the new prefects for Cochabamba and La Paz, which were the two prefects that were revoked in the recall referendum.
It sounds like good news from Bolivia. It sounds as if, for once, the popular organisations have managed to put the right-wing and fascist tendencies on the back foot.
I think on this issue, there's two fundamental sort of. I think, you know, what I got out of there of my visit to Bolivia was two fundamental things. Firstly, is that there's been a chain of events, particularly this year, that has seen a reactivation of the social movements, and that really now sees them. You know, at least a few of the people that I interviewed when I was there in Bolivia referred to as perhaps the third wave. In this Bolivian sort of revolutionary process, the first wave being in October 2003 with the overthrow of Gonzalo Sanchez de Lozada, but which then under the government of Mesa sort of declined. Then you had a second wave, which was the uprising, firstly that got rid of Mesa, then was reflected in the vote for the MAS government. And then the first year of the MAS sort of government with its push on the gas nationalizations and some of the other key measures and the approval, the move to go towards a constituent assembly. Mm. But which really sort of the following year after 2007 sort of saw a decline where, you know, constituent assembly was bogged down, where the opposition seemed to be regaining strength. It didn't seem, they, you know, were regaining strength. The social movements unsure of how to react to this, what relationship to have with the government and whatnot. But one that, with the listeners have heard about was the sort of horrific racist attacks that occurred in Sucre early this year, where I can't remember the exact figure, but I think it was somewhere between 30 or 40 indigenous people, you know, were basically stripped down, beaten, forced to chant anti-Evo slogans. You know, something that really sort of hit hard at the dignity of the sort of you know, indigenous campesino majority that make up really the backbone of the Evo government, and who said that this had gone too far and we could not tolerate this anymore. And then the continued, you know, violence that occurred and then peaked sort of following the recall referendum has seen a real consolidation of the social movements, one that are willing to come out on the streets to defend this government, to push forward, you know, to criticise the government when necessary and push forward. And has also seen a unity perhaps not seen before amongst the social movements, where even sections like the Bolivian Workers Central, which has had a sort of love-hate relationship perhaps with the Evo Morales government, but has now decisively, you know, signed an agreement, a pact, with the peasant and indigenous organisations to mobilise together, the COB, the Bolivian Workers Central, and the National Coalition of Change initiated this march onto La Paz. So really, you see that on the ascendancy. And the second thing is a right that is totally divided, totally unsure of where to go next. And I think what we are starting to see the beginnings of is an emergence, or a real reaction, even within sections of, you know, the opposition supporting layers in Santa Cruz, but who just really feel that this violent wave just went way too far and want nothing to do with this ultra-right section, at least in the short to medium term. And some figures in the opposition who are trying to position themselves as a sort of a more moderate opposition that are willing to do, you know, do this as a kind of democratic, in inverted commas. And of course, you know, really we know that many of them were involved with the opposition plan but to overthrow the government, but we're not seen as the key leaders of it. They are now seen. So we see this division in the opposition and probably a more consolidation of a more moderate ring and an isolation of that really ultra-right sort of, really what you could call fascist sort of wing of this movement.
Yeah, so how much did this have to do with the expulsion of the American ambassador or the support of the other Latin American states?
To start off with the second part, I think the you know, a crucial element as well, which I should have mentioned, was the decision taken at the meeting of UNASUR, of the Union of South American Nations. Which is a resolution that was voted on by some 9 countries of South America, strongly in defence of the Bolivian government and against the violence of the opposition. Now, of course, this meeting bringing together different governments had its, you know, different positions that were expressed at the meeting. And some more moderate seeing this as a sort of a kind of a tussle between two equals that had to sit down at the table, when of course the 67% vote had clearly shown that we're not dealing here with two equal sides, but you know, an overwhelming majority and a small minority that today are even a smaller minority than they were just a month and a half ago. Compare that to, you know, more sort of stronger positions expressed by the governments of Bolivia and Venezuela, who wanted an open condemnation of the role of U.S. imperialism in this plot, but which was not reflected in the final resolution. But yeah, putting aside, you know, obviously the different positions expressed at this meeting, the impact of this statement was obviously had a crucial role to play in defeating this sort of right-wing plot against the Morales government. Now, how much did getting rid of the U.S. ambassador have to do? Well, I think it had a lot to do in the sense of expressing the sort of urgency of the situation. But, you know, of course, while the ambassador went, the embassy stayed there, and they continue to this day to operate and work to undermine the government and have been doing for a long time, and undoubtedly will continue to do that, not just through the ambassador, not just through the embassy, but through, you know, projects like USAID, directly funding opposition parties, directly funding opposition movements, you know, which is why the government has, you know, responded to this with its campaign, you know, to create territories free of USAID.
That's an interesting concept.
Well, we have already seen that the coca grower unions, together with the local councils, the municipal councils in the Chapare region, declare their area a territory free of USAID, and no organisations there will accept funding from USAID, and moreover, you know, they will not be allowed to come back in. A second area has done that as well, and the government is discussing the possibility of just expelling USAID altogether from Bolivia, from their openly sort of subversive role that they're playing there. We've also seen that the government has declared that the Drug Enforcement Agency will no longer be able to carry you know, flights over Bolivian territory, which is obviously a big, you know, this has hit hard for the US. It's always felt they have the right to do whatever they want in their own backyard. And we've seen the retaliation to this with the US saying that they're going to cut, you know, an aid project, sort of part of the sort of drug, you know, anti-drug collaboration between Bolivia and U.S. government, and one aid that helps, you know, quite a large part of industry, or, you know, an important part of industry anyway, factories with reduced tariffs and whatnot. The U.S. government has said they're going to cut this, and this is going to have, you know, certainly some impact on the Bolivian economy in the sense of unemployment, as jobs, a certain amount of jobs are going to be lost as a result of this action by the U.S. But this is clearly because they're being hurt by the strong stance of the Morales government, and I'm sure we're going to continue to see more subversive actions by the U.S., and we'll continue to see a strong push forward by the Bolivian government to defend its sovereignty. Only a few days ago, they officially handed over another letter to the U.S. government demanding the extradition of the former president, Gonzalo Sánchez de Lozada, who's wanted for trial for the murder of 67 people in the massacre that occurred and the uprising that overthrew him. And more and more, you know, the Bolivian government, particularly through Morales at the international level, is denouncing capitalism. And in fact, more and more also now talking about the question of socialism, or as they sort of referring to it as communitarian socialism, I guess drawing in on some of the sort of indigenous aspects.
And they're talking about it more openly now.
I think so. In fact, some three times now, Morales has stated that that a poll that was done demonstrated that the majority of Bolivians are in favour of socialism. Mm. And that, you know, that he feels that, you know, if the people want socialism, then, you know, I have to obey the people and go in that direction. Mm. And I think, you know, so we are starting to see that. I mean, these are a few statements that have been said here and there, and I think there's still a long way to go into developing a real debate in Bolivian society about, mm-hmm. you know, well, what is socialism, what kind of socialism, mm. what do we mean by communitarian mm. socialism? But I think, you know, what we'll really see in the next period, you know, hopefully, is a big debate and an explanation of the real sort of reach of this new constitution and how this new constitution can be used to help organise the people, how to transfer mm. more power to the people, and how to begin to really, you know, build a new Bolivia that's not just there on paper, but one that's, you know, there in reality, where mm-hmm. where it's the people that, you know, are truly empowering in that society.